Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. And we are here now for 7 Steps to Awakening. And I'm going to begin on quote number 569. Of course, after I get done, about 55 minutes of 7 Steps to Awakening, Chris Saleem is going to be our guest for tonight's Awakening Together Satsang. So make sure you hang around for that. It's pre-recorded because she wasn't available tonight, so I know that it's a really good talk. Been there, done that already, so please hang around and listen. I interviewed her last Monday on the phone, and I'll be sharing that interview with you in 54 minutes. 54 minutes. But first, I'm just going to take a moment of silence. And that's enough right there. Just a teeny tiny little bit was all that was needed. Let me share a link with you. This link goes to my 7 Steps journal. And it goes to quote 569. Actually, not quote 569. It goes to what I wrote after contemplating quote 569. And what I've just given you is 569A, which means I spent some time with quote 569 and actually wrote more than one thing about it. Quote 569 is from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. I think he passed away in around 1982. So for those of you who don't know him, he is a very modern type of sage. In fact, Timothy Conway, who is going to be the speaker at our satsang in Santa Barbara next month, September 12 to 14, he was with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj for at least some time and refers to Sri Nisargadatta as his mentor. So Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj is a very modern sage, very, very clear sage, as clear as any sage I've ever heard speak. And this is quote 569. When you believe yourself to be a person, you see persons everywhere. In reality, there are no persons, only threads of memories and habits. At the moment of realization, the person ceases. Identity remains. But identity is not a person. It is inherent in the reality itself. Quite an interesting quote, and I can see why I spent some time with it. In fact, one of the things you'll hear tonight in the Chris Saleem audio that I'm going to play, and by the way, if somebody is listening to this audio later and you want to know where can I get the Chris Saleem audio Regina's talking about, you will be able to find that at awakening-together.org under featured talks. You'll be able to find the Chris Saleem audio there. It will be posted there around 10 p.m. tonight. But one of the things I asked Chris about, because it's one of those semi-controversial topics, meaning different people have different opinions. And one of the things I asked Chris about was, you know, there's that saying that goes around, I'm sure you've all heard it, as long as someone is still in a body, they still have ego stuff to work through. And typically what people don't understand when they say that is they've actually got that backwards. It's backwards. It's as long as I perceive people in bodies, I still have ego stuff to work through. See, we project that error out. And we say, for example, because I see you in a body, you have ego stuff to work through. But that is a misprojection. Because I see you in a body means I have ego stuff to work through. There's a great quote somewhere. You know, maybe we'll read it soon. Maybe I've read it before at an earlier time with the 7 Steps. But there's this great quote with Nisargadatta where he's sitting down with a questioner and he's talking. I don't remember exactly what he's saying, but he's speaking from the identity of reality. the unmanifest I, right? He's speaking from the identity of reality, and he's saying things like, I do not see a world, I do not see bodies, that type of thing. And a questioner who's talking to him says, but I see you sitting there smoking cigarettes. And Nisargadatta says, that is your I am the body belief. Right? We have to remember that what we see is our perception. We can't really comment on what somebody else sees. And if someone is looking at me, telling me, I do not see a world, I do not see people, why would I distrust them and say, but I see you in a body? That's then me talking about what I see. So listen again to this quote from Nisargadatta. When you believe yourself to be a person, you see persons everywhere. In reality, there are no persons, only threads of memories and habits. At the moment of realization, the person ceases. And then he says, identity remains. But identity is not a person. It is inherent in the reality itself. What he is referring to is the I that is not a person. Ramana Maharshi used to call it the I. It was previous to the I thought. So instead of just calling it I, he would call it I, which to me is like back up to the I. You know, find your I thought, go back that far, and then go back again to another I. And that's your real I. I. Muji once said, the devil says I and God says I. Where are you on that continuum, right? So there is, and of course we've all read, you know, many of you, if not everyone in this room now, has read from NTI. And you know, when in NTI, when the Holy Spirit is speaking, it uses the word I, right? So there is still an identity. But the identity is not specific to an object. It's a non-specific identity that is inclusive of everything. Because see, Dev has written, so I guess it's trust and trust the vision in the master or awakened one, the way I'm learning to hear and trust Jesus. Yeah, I think that it's fair to use discernment. I do think that certainly there are people who claim to be awakened who probably are not. And, you know, it's kind of like, it reminds me of Jesus in the Bible, where Jesus says something about the good fruit comes from the good tree and the bad fruit comes from the bad tree. You can kind of tell if you get to know someone. You know, you can kind of tell if there's a lot of ego there, a lot of arrogance there. There'll be a lot of arrogance typically with someone who is not awakened but claims to be. A lot of repression and denial going on. Often a lot of manipulation and control happening. And those are certainly not the characteristics of awakening. But yeah, if you are with someone that appears very, very clear, appears to be a master, and they say things like, I do not see a world, I do not see people. You know, sometimes here's, this is not a direct comment to you, Deborah, to anyone else. This is what I say to myself, and now I'm sharing it in case somebody else wants to take it as well. But what I say to myself is, sometimes it's a good time to sit down, shut up, and listen. And you got to know when those times are. You got to know when you're in the presence of someone that it's a good time to sit down, shut up, and listen. And when I say shut up and listen, again, I'm talking to myself, but when I say shut up and listen, you know, I'm not just speaking about the mouth, I'm speaking about the mind. You know, stop all of the judging and all of the doubting and all of the questioning. And what I like to do when I know the time is right is I like to become a sponge. I really like to feel like a sponge and in a non-thinking way, well, what I said, sit down, shut up, and listen. I like to just, you know, be in the presence of that clarity and not think about that clarity at all, just be with it. And in fact, I have this incredible trust that whenever I do that, even if, you know, like let's say I sat down with an extremely clear person for an hour and maybe it seems like I didn't hear anything new, But what I trust is that something is shifting in my willingness to sit down, shut up, and listen. And I do think that there are people in this world that we would perceive in bodies that are worth that attention from us. And in fact, to be honest, I think that Magdi and Timothy may be among them. That's why there are speakers in Santa Barbara. Not just me, but all of the trustees. We listened to a number of people, and we felt that they were very clear and very consistent. But there are others as well. Many of them we have here on the third Sunday of each month for the Awakening Together Satsang. But yeah, sometimes, you know, it's good just to sit down, shut up, and listen. Soak it in. Be with it. Be in the presence of that clarity. I can't think of anything more helpful to do at some points. So again, Sri Nisargadatta said, when you believe yourself to be a person, you see persons everywhere. In reality, there are no persons, only threads of memories and habits. At the moment of realization, the person ceases. Identity remains, but identity is not a person. It is inherent in the reality itself. All right, so I'm going to go to the journal now and see what I wrote on this. Starting with 569A, very, very, very short, but very clear, I wrote, I am a person is a false idea. Now, just a moment ago, I said something about, you know, sometimes it's really good to sit down, shut up, and listen. Well, of course, when I was speaking a moment ago, I was just speaking when I'm in the presence of what appears to be another, you know, but I can recognize that clarity. But to be honest, sometimes I notice it's time to sit down, shut up, and listen to that which is within myself. You know, sit down and shut up and listen. Just be with it. And even this little bitty line right here, I am a person, is a false idea, which came from within me. That's a good, good, good line to just sit down, shut up, and listen to. You know, just be with that. In fact, I don't see how we could be with even that one line too long. Because we're so quick to go back to the belief, I am a person, you are a person. Everybody is persons, right? I think, you know, just this one little bitty line, I am a person, is a false idea. Just sit and be with that. Soak it in like a sponge. No need to think about it. No need to start, you know, trying to analyze it. What the heck does that mean? Just being with it. I am a person. It's a false idea. It could even be a mantra for a time, possibly. Where we just pause multiple times throughout the day and say to ourselves, I am a person is a false idea. And then just kind of let the stillness hang in the air after saying that mantra. I am a person. It's a false idea. I am a person. It's a false idea. I'm going to go ahead and go underneath the comment and reply area underneath 569A, and I'm going to click on 569B. Now again, this is still in contemplation of the Nisargadatta quote 569, which says, when you believe yourself to be a person, you see persons everywhere. In reality, there are no persons, only threads of memories and habits. At the moment of realization, the person ceases. Identity remains. But identity is not a person, it is inherent in the reality itself. And 569B in my journal says, I am a person leads to the thought, he is a person, or she is a person. In these ideas, one will find judgment and a strong sense of separation or individuality. And it feels like after reading that, it's a good idea to go back and say once again, I am a person is a false idea. If I believe the idea, the false idea, I am a person, I'm also going to believe he is a person. I'm going to believe she is a person. And in these ideas, I'm going to find judgment. And I'm going to find a strong sense of separation or individuality. The truth of our reality, the oneness of our reality, will be hidden to me. Therefore, what I need to do, what I am willing to do, is to let go of the idea, I am a person. When I no longer see myself as a person, I will no longer see persons. I am a person is a false idea. This is a false idea I am willing to let go of. It is a false idea that only blinds me to the truth. Recently, I was rereading the story of Sri Ramana Maharshi's death. And, you know, it's very interesting because he had sarcoma. And what the doctors wanted to do, he had a growth on his arm. And what the doctors wanted to do was amputate his arm in order to save his life. And the only way I can word it is he just didn't feel that guidance. In fact, what he said to the doctors was, I let you take care of your body, you let me take care of mine. And without giving any more reason than that, he did not permit the amputation. And the cancer spread, and of course he died. The body died, I should say. But as the body was dying, his devotees were extremely sad because they really loved Ramana Maharshi. I think he was a presence that you could not help but fall deeply, deeply, deeply in love with. And yet because his devotees saw themselves as bodies, they saw him as a body. And so they thought that he was dying and he would say to them, you know, where am I going to go? I will always be here. You know, he would tell them to let go of their belief in the body. Let go of their I am the body idea. He did not see himself as a body. He did not see himself as dying. It was the devotees who were sad and saw him as dying. And I feel like I can say that, I kind of know for a fact that there was no death there. Because as you all know, Ramana Maharshi showed up somehow in me and became my inner teacher without me even knowing about the man, Ramana Maharshi. I mean, I guess I had a slight knowing that there was someone named Ramana Maharshi, a slight knowing. Laurent had mentioned him, and I was guided to order a book that I did not read. But I didn't know him, you know, I don't feel like I knew him at all. I don't feel like I knew him at all. And yet when he showed up in me, that presence was so strong, so clear, that I felt like I knew him immediately. And not only that, the most amazing part is I felt like that he is myself. I felt like in knowing him, I knew myself better than I ever had. You see, all of that transcends the body. How can he, you know, a man from South India who died in the 1950s, actually in 1950 itself, April 1950, how can he and I, a female who wasn't born until 1960, be the same? How can we be the same one? And yet, as he spoke to me from within me, I knew myself. You see, that transcends the idea of person, doesn't it? And the deeper we go into this transcendence of the idea of person, the more we know everything as ourself. All there is self. Therefore, there aren't persons, there aren't individuals, there aren't others. You know, NTI 1 Corinthians, when talking about the phase of awakening that we call enlightenment, it says, you will speak to brothers, but you will not know brothers. Or maybe it says, you will not know brothers, but you will speak to them. I think that's the exact quote. You will not know brothers, but you will speak to them. So that means that in the state that we call enlightenment, the one who is enlightened, although he or she may appear in a body as another to the rest of us, to that one there is only the self. There are no more persons. Just as Sri Nisargadatta has said in this quote, in reality there are no persons. At the moment of realization, the person ceases. So again, I am a person leads to the thought, he is a person or she is a person. So without me having the I am a body or the I am a person thought in me, I do not see persons or see bodies outside of me. You see? So if I see you in a body, it means that I still have the ego belief or the belief in separation alive in me. It does not necessarily mean that you do. That's showing me how I see. It's showing me how I think. It's showing me how I believe. My perception is showing me my mind, always. My perception is showing me my mind, always. I am a person leads to the thought, he is a person or she is a person. In these ideas, one will find judgment and a strong sense of separation or individuality. Now I'm going to scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on 569C. Again, 569C is a continuation of a contemplation of the same quote. And this says, realization of one's true self ends the I am a person idea. I cannot know who I am and forget who I am simultaneously. I cannot know who I am and be confused about who I am simultaneously. So when I know who I know who I am, which means realization of one's true self ends the I am a person idea. And of course, if I do not have the I am a person idea here, then I do not look out there and see persons. If I do not have the I am a person idea here, I do not look out there and see persons. It's impossible. realization of oneself ends the I am a person idea. And I'm going to scroll down and click on 569D. True self, or I, self-realization, person is not. And again, remember I said Ramana Maharshi called this I. Like the first I goes back to the I thought, and then the second I goes to before the I thought, to that true identity. It's like I said in NTI, when the Holy Spirit is speaking, it still uses the word I. As Muji said, the devil or the ego uses the word I, and God uses the word I. But it is I without a person. I without attachment to an object as what I am. I without a sense of anything that is not I. You could call it pure I. Pure, unattached, omnipresent I. Self, or I, is present in self-realization. Person is not. And I'm going to scroll down and click on number 570. Now, 570, of course, is a new quote, so I'll read this quote. This is also a Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj quote. Of what use is the relative view to you? You are able to look from the absolute point of view. Why go back to the relative? Are you afraid of the absolute? Now, I'm going to use my imagination here a little bit. You know, most of the Nisargadatta quotes are actually a part of a conversation. These are taken out of a conversation. The conversation is recorded in a book called I am that I am. So Nisargadatta is probably talking directly to someone here, and that someone is probably going back to the non-absolute. You know, it reminds me of a video that, you know, Lynn Johnson and I and some others saw, where one speaker was speaking from the absolute. And the interviewer kept trying to bring him back to the relative by saying, yeah, but, you know, but where do you live? Or, you know, asking him questions like that. And the speaker was saying, you know, I don't live in a specific place. I am not specific. And the interviewer was getting very frustrated, you know, like, you know, seeming to imply or maybe even directly stating, you know, get off your high horse, quit pretending like you're not a person. I know you're a person. I want to talk about the person. Quit acting so absolute. And the one speaking was trying to say, but this is what I am. You know, this is what I am. I am all things and no thing. I am not a body. I am not a person. And it was kind of interesting watching the dialogue. But, you know, that's what this next quote by Nisargadatta reminds me of. It's almost as if he was probably sitting there talking to someone. He was talking from the absolute. And you know what? The person that he was talking to probably should have realized that this was a time to sit down, shut up, and listen. Even if you can't understand, you know, sometimes when you're with one who is speaking in such absolute terms, you know, you can't mentally understand that. The mind never will understand that. And so this is why, again, this is why the shut up part is so important. Because the mind can't understand it, and the mind is going to be asking questions and judging statements and doing all of this stuff that is blocking your ability to just absorb or be with. And I'm saying, sit down. Yeah, sit down. And like I said, I'm not really, I don't want anybody to be offended by the word shut up. This is what I say to myself in a very non-judgmental way. Yes, yeah, sit down, you know, shut up and listen. This is what this is, this time is to sit down, shut up and listen. Yeah. but you know, maybe that's what this person should have been doing. You know, Nisargadatta was speaking probably at a level that the person obviously could not mentally comprehend. But instead of coming back and asking questions and continually returning to, but what about the body? But what about, you know, the fact that you have to go to work? And what about the fact that you have to raise your family? And what about this? And what about this? Instead of doing all of that thinking and asking, the person probably would have been much better off just to sit and be with the words, even though there was no understanding. Sometimes it's best just to be a sponge. Really. Sometimes it's best just to be a sponge. But it looks like probably this person wasn't, whoever Nisargadatta was talking to, because listen to this. Of what use is the relative view to you? You are able to look from the absolute point of view. Why go back to the relative? Are you afraid of the absolute? I guess, you know, we could ask, how come? Why don't we sit down, shut up, and listen? What makes us want to do all the chatting and all the asking when clarity is speaking? What makes us want to judge and you know, try and insist that clarity prove itself or make sense to the intellectual mind? What in us is involved in all of that activity? Why aren't we willing just to sit down, shut up, and listen when there's clarity beyond the mind present? Why aren't we willing just to be the sponge and absorb? Why aren't we willing to let grace do its role while we do nothing? You know, it reminds me very much of the Course in Miracles statement, I need do nothing. You know, sometimes we need to sit down, shut up, and listen, or sit down and shut up and allow grace to do its job. Right? And I think I have to go let Jamie in. Hold on one moment. I went to let her in, and just as I did, somebody upstairs opened that door, so she ran up there. But yeah, sit down, shut up, and allow grace. That's a wonderful way to say it. Sit down, shut up, and allow grace. And really, I think that that is so important sometimes. And it's up to us to know when it's time to do that, right? So one more time, here's the Nisargadatta quote, and then we'll go look at my journal. Of what use is the relative view to you? You are able to look from the absolute point of view. Why go back to the relative? Are you afraid of the absolute? All right, let's look at my journal. Able to know the non-attached self, there is no reason to return to the perspective of the little self dependent on environment. Now this I know that I wrote as what I would call a statement of willingness. Sometimes when I am in contemplation, I write what I call statements of willingness. They are statements that are beyond my current ability or my current experience. You know, it kind of reminds me of the law of attraction. Some of you may be familiar with the audio that's on the, it's listed on the classics under reginadonacres.com under the then menu, THEN. It's called The Secret Holy Spirit Style, right? And what happened, that came about right after I had seen the movie The Secret and learned about the law of attraction and sat down and wrote down what I thought my goals were. I wrote down like 5 or 6 things that I thought I wanted. And, you know, my intention when I wrote them down was to use the law of attraction to attract those things into my life so that I could be perfectly happy. But when I wrote those things down, what I intuitively realized is even if I attracted each of them, there were 5 or 6 of them, even if I attracted each of them fully into my life, there would not be perfect happiness. All that would happen is that something else then would come that I would want, because those were ego wants. And the ego can get what it wants, and it can temporarily be satisfied, but then it wants something else. And I knew that when I looked at my list. And so what I felt guided to do was to ask Holy Spirit, what do I want? And 5 wants were given. 5 wants were given to me from the Holy Spirit. All 5 were beyond my spiritual ability at that time. But I was guided to repeat them to myself, you know, daily. Maybe it was even more than once a day. Just repeat them. And one by one, so far, 4 out of the 5 are now within my spiritual ability, within my natural experience. The 5th one is still what we could call a goal. So sometimes when I'm writing, I write these statements, you know, that are beyond my current spiritual ability, but I know that in writing them and giving my willingness to them and giving my attention to them and opening to them, that somehow the shift that those sentences represent will come to be. And I know that. I don't have to do anything else. You don't make them happen. You just open to them. And so this statement is one of those statements. You see, able to know the non-attached true self. I don't know that I'm really able to know the non-attached true self now. I mean, maybe little glimmers every now and then, but if I'm absolutely honest, my primary experience is still of a person. It is shifting. It's not the same as it used to be. It's like a less attached to the person idea. It's a looser attached to the person idea. But it is not non-attached, like completely non-attached. So this is like this type of a willingness statement, able to know the non-attached self. There is no reason to return to the perspective of the self dependent on environment. I just give willingness. And gratitude. As soon as I said just give willingness, I felt this gratitude that it is so. That it is true, even though it is not my current experience. You know, and even that's like the law of attraction. If you saw the movie The Secret, you saw that they were teaching you if you wanted the red convertible. Remember, you sit in a chair and you close your eyes and you imagine you're in the red convertible and you hold on to the steering wheel and you hear the motor and you imagine, you know, the wind in your hair and you imagine you're going down the street and you smell the leather in the car and you feel gratitude for already having the car, right? It's the same principle. It's just that it's not ego focused. Like a red convertible is ego-focused. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with red convertibles, but it's not going to bring you permanent happiness. So instead, we feel gratitude that the truth is already true. We feel gratitude that we are not people. Feel gratitude for the I. The I that is not attached to an object. The self that is all things and nothing. You feel gratitude for it already being. Able to know the non-attached self. And then gratitude for that. For being able to know the non-attached self. Gratitude for that truth. Able to know the non-attached self. Gratitude. There is no reason to return to the perspective of the self dependent on environment. Don't need to go back to that. Don't need to go back to I am a mother. Don't need to go back to I am president of Awakening Together. Don't need to go back to I am a homeowner. I am a pet owner. I don't need any of that. There is no need to go back. The ego will tell you there is. Even if you have this temporary experience of non-attached self, the ego will come in and say, ah, but you got to go back. You got to go back because you're responsible for this. You got to go back because people need you here. You got to go back. We had somebody here in the room one day who shared that experience. I can't remember who it was, but she talked about how I think she was in meditation. And she completely lost the sense of the I am the body idea. She was kind of, you could say she was disappearing into everything. And then she had the thought that she had to go back. She had, she couldn't let go. She had this to do and that to do, and she had to go back. But Nisargadatta says, of what use is the relative view to you? You are able to look from the absolute point of view. Why go back to the relative? The journal says, able to know the non-attached self. There is no reason to return to the perspective of the self dependent on environment. And let's scroll down and click on 571A. Now, 571 is a little longer. It is a conversation between Nisargadatta Maharaj and a questioner. So here it is. The questioner says, I am engaged in the study of philosophy, sociology, and education. I think more mental development is needed before I can dream of self-realization. Am I on the right track? And Nisargadatta said, to earn a livelihood, some specialized knowledge is needed. General knowledge develops the mind, no doubt. But if you are going to spend your life in amassing knowledge, you build a wall around yourself. To go beyond the mind, a well-furnished mind is not needed. The questioner asks, then what is needed? And Nisargadatta says, distrust your mind and go beyond. The questioner says, what shall I find beyond the mind? And Nisargadatta says, the direct experience of being, knowing, and loving. So let's look at my journal, 571A. I wrote, some involvement with the world is necessary. This cannot be avoided. But involvement with the world and attachment to it or dependence on it are not the same thing. You know, like, I need to pay bills. So I need to, have a job. I need to know how to pay the bills, how to balance a checkbook. You know, there are some things I need to know how to do. But maybe what I don't need to know is, Maybe I don't need to understand outer space. Maybe I don't need to understand Einstein's theories. Maybe I don't need to know everything that happened in the history of America. Maybe there are things that sometimes we're interested in knowing that we don't need to know. Can we know the difference between what we need to do for our role in life, and can we drop the rest and spend what you could call the rest of the time just focusing on self-realization? Do we try to gain too much knowledge, knowledge we don't need? I need to know that a red light means stop and a green light needs go, but I don't need to know how an engine works, right? So where, maybe, are we spending too much time just gaining knowledge for the sake of, to be honest, distraction? Yesterday, I got a fortune cookie, which I kept. I don't have the fortune with me. It's upstairs in my purse, but I kept it because I just thought it was such a good fortune. It said something like, first, decide what you want. Second, do what you need to do. First, decide what you want. Second, do what you need to do. You know, they go together. So I looked at that and I asked, you know, what does that mean? First, decide what you want. Self-realization. Second, do what you need to do. What do I need to do for self-realization? And am I doing that, or am I doing other things with my time? Right? First, decide what you want. Second, do what you need to do. What do I need to do? You know, Michael Langford, in his book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, you know, he talks about using all of our free time for awareness, watching awareness. But he brings up that there may be things that you need to do also. Like, you know, one example he uses is take a shower. Maybe someone else doesn't think taking a shower is so important. I don't know, but Michael does, I guess. You need to take a shower. You know, some people he recognizes may need to go to work. You know, I don't know that he did, but some people may have to go to work to support a family. But every minute of your day, are you really spending it the way you need to? Or is some of it just distraction? And is there maybe like 2 hours a day that's being spent on things that really aren't necessary? And instead, what you should be doing is spending time in whatever way is appropriate for you, focusing on self-realization. Is that what you need to be doing? Are we really doing what we need to do all the time, or is there a lot of unnecessary distraction in there? It's a good question. That's why I kept the fortune cookie. I know there's some distraction in there. There always has been, and there continues to be. I know that. And I don't say that with any judgment. You know, and then what am I going to do with it? I don't know. I kept the fortune cookie. That's all I can say. And I haven't forgotten what it said, and I'm contemplating it. Maybe I'm giving my willingness. Right? Just being with it. I'm sitting down, and I'm shutting up, and I'm listening to a fortune cookie right now. Because it was wisdom, and I know it. Right? Jacqueline says, she feels as if she becomes fatigued and needs a break sometimes. Yeah, that may be true too, but I know in my heart, you know, like one of the things I'm learning to do right now is golf. And I probably spend 4 to 5 hours a week practicing golf. I asked myself, do I spend 4 to 5 hours a week sitting in awareness, watching awareness? Oh, hell no, I don't. Why? Is golf more important to me? I think these are reasonable questions. At least they feel reasonable to me. Right? Why do I spend my time the way I do? First, decide what you want. Then, second, do what you need to do. Now, maybe the fortune cookie was talking about getting the red convertible, but it wasn't specific. You know, it didn't say, first, realize you want a red convertible, then start saving your money. It just said, first, decide what you want, then do what you need to do. What do I want? That's first. How much do I want it? These are very good questions. In fact, in about 4 minutes, I'm going to shut up and we're going to listen to Chris Celine. And we're going to hear her talking about how she was really driven by what she truly wanted. And we're going to hear how it doesn't sound like there was a lot of distraction for her. And she awoke. She self-realized. Because she decided what she wanted. And then she did what she needed to do. Now again, the first part is important. Decide what you want. Maybe some of us don't want self-realization yet, and that's okay. You know, it's a lie to think you're guilty if you want something else. In fact, sometimes there are other things we want, and the way we ready ourselves for self-realization is going ahead and chasing those paths first. It's by trying this and trying that and then finding out that none of those worked. You know, it's kind of like we burn off those other desires. And then we come back and now finally we're really ready to want this. And maybe that's a part of what I'm doing right now. Maybe I'm still burning off other desires and that's why I'm not as dedicated as I could be. Maybe I need to find out that, you know, spending time with my family, that's the real reason I golf. Maybe I need to find out that spending time with my family isn't it. You know, I don't know what I'm doing and I'm not claiming to know what I'm doing. But I do know when something speaks to my heart. And I do know when to listen. I do know when to give it some attention, even if I'm not fully ready to fully follow it now. You know, one thing Peace Pilgrim said that's really beautiful is, she said it took a long time for the living to catch up to the believing. Which means she knew some of these things too before she actually practiced them or lived them. That's somewhat natural. That's okay. But sometimes it's a good idea to sit down, shut up, and listen, just to soak it in, even if we're not fully ready to live it yet, even if we're not fully ready for that step yet. Sometimes just being in the presence of that idea is helpful. It's shifting us. It's moving us. So again, 571A says, some involvement with the world is necessary. This cannot be avoided. But involvement with the world and attachment to it or dependence on it are not the same thing. I'm going to go down and click on 571B. 571B says, remain as the non-attached self and know yourself as you are. How do you remain as the non-attached self even while you're asking questions like, am I using my time appropriately? Even as you see yourself maybe doing something that you know is a distraction, that you know is not the best use of your time if what you want is self-realization. Can you even in that, watching yourself walk in a direction that you know is not in your best interest and remain as the non-attached self and know yourself as you are? I say that you can. I say that there is a way to be the observer even as you're not living up to your guidance. And I also say that being the observer even as you're not living up to your guidance is a part of burning off the unnecessary. And this is what's going to get us to the point of living our guidance. Judgment is never, ever helpful. So if we are not fully living up to our guidance at this time, Let us be the unattached observer of ourself as we don't live up to our guidance and allow whatever needs to be burned off, burned up and burned off. Allow it to happen through our watching, right? Allow it to happen through our watching. And at some point, there will be more readiness than there is today. All right. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to try putting on a song. And then while the song plays, I'm going to save this audio. If the sound is not good, I apologize in advance. I don't know what it's like. When I'm saving an audio and you're speaking, I cannot hear you. My computer doesn't do both. What I don't know is if you'll be able to hear my song while I'm saving. I'm very excited to experiment with that and find out. So I'm going to play a song, save this file. When the song is over and the file is saved, we will begin the crystalline satsang. Okay? So hopefully I'll be with you. As this song plays, let me get on my playlist. Okay, I'm going to my inspiration playlist. And the song that jumped out at me is Born Free by Andy Williams. So you know what? That's what we're going to listen to. Here's Born Free.